Hello and welcome to the Mushing Podcast. This is Robert, and today I am introducing a guy I met a couple of years ago in Washington, and he's doing a bunch of great things, not only in the dog training space, but also in the mushing space. So this is a cross-promoted episode between the two podcasts, Mushing and Dog Works Radio. Here we have Andrew Camaletti. Check it out.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with a top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Andrew, thank you for joining us today. How are things up in Boston, Massachusetts?
Things are great. I had a great day today with, I'm a dog walker, and had a great day not only biking with some dogs, but also walking the beach with some dogs. And now I'm packing up to get ready to head to a race in Pennsylvania.
I'm excited.
I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. You and I have known each other for a year or so. We met at a race, a mushing race in Washington last October. You were doing some pretty cool film work. We're going to talk a little bit about that and really jump into sort of both sides of the coin, because you do a lot of really cool stuff. I think it'll really meet the needs of our listeners. So let's jump into this, Andrew. If you can, briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please.
So my name's Andrew, and I recently, within the last 7 years, sort of came into the dog world, and that was with my first dog. And ever since then, I discovered the world of mushing. I guess prior to that, though, I actually discovered my love for creating both pictures and videos. And so when I found mushing, I just combined the two. You know, it was rather simple math on my end. So I got into mushing, and then from there, I started making these like music videos, and then eventually turned into a documentary, if you will, call it that.
So Andrew, I'm really excited to talk to you about your filmmaking and all that you do there, but let's do the dog training side of things first. I know that you have a couple of border collies, Bailey and Banjo. One of them is your travel buddy. The other one is your training buddy, if you will, that you race with and all of that. How did you get involved with that particular breed? Have you grown up with that breed? Is it something you fell into or what?
Yeah, so growing up, we had a miniature dachshund and a Yorkie. And I'm not going to lie to you, I was not super interested in dogs growing up. I was more interested in being at like the skate park or logging into World of Warcraft to like game with my friends. Dogs really weren't my thing until about when I got to college, and I really, really wanted a dog. And I was living with my parents through college, and they said, "Hey, look, you're not responsible enough. You don't have a real job yet. Blah, blah, blah. A million reasons you're not ready for a dog." So I waited patiently for another probably 6 or so years, graduated college. I got my first real job, if you will, doing IT. I was making like a good chunk, you know, like $80K a year in the city. I was miserable though. My parents, they finally said like, "Hey, we think you're ready." You know, I had moved out, getting married, got my job. So I get the dog, best decision of my life. That was Bailey. And the moment I got her was like sort of the end of that career, doing IT. I very, very quickly just quit my job. I just put in my 2 weeks notice, left, and I had no plan. I took like 3 weeks where I just said like, "All right, let me just take some time off, figure out what I want to do. Because what was happening is I had this 4-month-old border collie, right? I'm leaving her with my parents to go into Boston. My mom, luckily, she didn't work. I'm dropping her off, going into Boston, working, coming home late. And now I have this puppy. And I just really said, like, what kind of life is that? You know, she's a border collie. She needs a lot. And I want to be there for her. So I took those 3 weeks and I said, like, what can I do that's going to allow me to be with her all the time? You know, and I was like, oh, you know, the first thought was like, oh, I could do Uber and she can just ride along in the Uber. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. So I toyed with the idea of doing dog walking, you know, the type where you have a client, you drive to their house, bring their dog out on a leash, return it, and then like on to the next one. I tried that for a little bit and I didn't like it because it was just so much driving and so much time. So I eventually found where I'm at now, where I pick up a whole bunch of dogs. We head to an off-leash dog park that's 23 acres.
So hold on a second, Andrew. You had just mentioned that your parents said, hey, dude, you're not ready for a dog until you graduate college and get a job. You graduated college, or at least finished college or whatever it is. You got a job. You bought the dog that you're parents probably didn't want you to buy anyway. You got one of the most high drive dogs you can possibly buy. You quit both the job and the school and left this dog with your parents while you did your thing. Is that right?
Yeah. So she was basically hanging out, you know, 9 to 5 with my mom while I worked. Yeah. And that, you know, that wasn't going to work long term, you know? And
right.
So I had to figure something out. So I just had to quit my job.
So now you are, I guess the best way to describe this for our listeners is you sort of do pack walks with dogs. You take a group of dogs, you load them up, you go over to this dog park or whatever. You let them run free, maybe do a little bit of socialization training and all of that sort of thing. I guess the main question I have for you is, what do your clients think of that? Because a lot of people aren't familiar with this type of dog walking. They are more familiar with what you mentioned. You show up, you charge an hourly fee to walk Max down the neighborhood there. Then you bring him back. They give you a key, all that sort of stuff. This is a little bit more intense, where you're picking up a gaggle of dogs and taking them out together. How do you explain this to your clients, particularly new clients who you've never dealt with before?
Yeah, so fortunately, most of the dogs that I've got now, I actually met at that dog park.
Okay.
So it was actually pretty easy because they're like, you know, hey, we love this place. If you're going to bring them here, you know, we're cool with it. But as far as explaining it to, like, say, a new dog, a new person that's never been there, basically, I bring them to a 23-acre peninsula that's all off-leash. So I bring 8 dogs at a time, and they get to roam free, which not a lot of people... I get a lot of comments like, hey, I can barely get my one dog to stay with me. How do you get like 8 dogs to stay with you?
Right.
You know?
Right. And what do you tell them when they ask you that? What do you tell them?
Yeah. So it's always so much easier when you have dogs in a group. So I've got 8 dogs though, who have been regulars for the past, say, 5 years. I'm very, very personally picky when I bring a new dog in on what breed it is. So I personally try to stick to either working dogs like a German Shepherd, herding dogs like a Border Collie, any type of dog that is really like focused.
Okay.
So something like a Beagle, that can be a little struggle because they tend to want to, you know, run in the woods and look for squirrels. So I have to do a good job on my end of vetting and making sure I get a dog that can handle, you know, that situation, for sure. Like they have to have good recall. Like, that's not an option.
Right.
So with this
type of program, how does this work for your clients? Is it a once a week deal? Is it a once a day? Do they pay monthly like a membership? What's the business side of things for folks that are listening?
Yeah. So the way I do it is I have, some dogs who join me every day. I have some dogs who it's just once a week, and I'm pretty flexible. For the most part, I like to tell people like, hey, just text me. And even if it's, you know, say I pick up dogs at 9 a.m. Say you text me at 8 a.m. That's totally fine with me. I'm very, very flexible. I just enjoy making sure that everybody's taken care of. All the dogs are very happy.
And I have seen your traveling rig, your minivan. It even has an air conditioner and the whole nine. Is this the same vehicle
Yes.
that you use to transport the dogs back and forth up there in Boston?
Yep, exactly. It gets when that van's sitting in my driveway, it's like an oven. It hits about 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So when I, you know, I'm at the dog park, same thing. It's sitting in the parking lot. We're in this 23-acre dog park having the time of our life, but my van's just out there just getting to 120 degrees. So with that air conditioner, all summer long, I mean, it keeps it at a nice 65. So when we're done playing, even if it's like really, really humid and hot, because it gets nasty here in Boston, they're hopping into a nice ice-cold car, and they get to just kind of relax and cool off. So that's been a real game changer for me, for sure.
And I know when we spoke this year in Wisconsin, even though you said that you're very particular about the clients you take on, dude, you've got to get a wrap on that van and promote the heck out of yourself, because it is the perfect marketing opportunity, don't you think?
I know, yeah. I'm already pretty, like, people see the AC, and I have a sign on the back, you know, watch for sled dogs. So people have started to already learn my car. So, yeah, I think I should just go all in at this point. People already know it's me.
Go all in. So with that, let's switch gears here a little bit, Andrew, and talk about the dog mushing side. In this same vehicle, you travel all over the place. As we mentioned at the top of the episode, you and I met in Washington, and then I know you've traveled all over Canada and everywhere with your dog, going to other races, not only to do filming, but also to compete. So that's really two sides of a different coin. Let's talk about the competing side of it first, because I really want to jump into the photography and videography that you do with your border collie. I just recently had on Tabitha Kopta, and I know that you got a chance to listen to that episode, or at least comment on it. And she races an entire team of border collies on a rig. I believe she's in the 6-dog class, and she was competing on the world stage there in Wisconsin. What classes do you compete in?
So I typically do 1-dog bike with my dog, and then what I do is, depending on where I typically only compete in local races in the sort of New Hampshire, Maine area.
Right.
And so depending on the day and who's available, I'll text my clients, because I have about 6 dogs that like to, I'll say, pull in quotations. They like to... We go slow, but they like doing it. And so, I've got about 6 different clients that I'll borrow their dogs, and we'll do either bike or scooter.
Okay.
Or what we do. Yep.
And I know that for folks that are in the dog sport world, there are all types of dogs running in all different classes. I've seen Labradors and Golden Retrievers and Border Collies and German Shepherds and everything. But man, did we open up a can of worms on our podcast the other day, when we said that, that Border Collies make really good sled dogs. I think we had something like 200 comments or something. And since your show is piggybacking that one pretty much, What is your thought on that about using, because you see all different dogs all the time in your dog training business. What are your thoughts on using dogs that are not typical for a particular sport or activity and having them excel in it, whether it be dog mushing or tracking or obedience or whatever? What are your thoughts as a sort of a professional dog walker and now dog musher?
Yeah, oh, I love it. I mean, that's one of my favorite things is when I'm at a race and I'm filming and I see like a golden retriever or a pit bull, or recently I've seen probably like 10 or 12 different Dobermans.
Wow.
Who have gotten into it. Yeah. And, I love that because my favorite thing is just getting a working dog, giving them a job and making them feel fulfilled. You know, I'm sure we've all felt, you know, if you've ever been off work for those 2-3 weeks in a row, real sick, you get tired of that after a while, right? Like the first week, it's cool being off, but then week 2, week 3, you're kind of like, I miss my routine, right? So like, same thing with working dogs, regardless of the job.
Right.
So I'm a huge fan for like, hey, if they enjoy it, let them do it. You know, it's only going to benefit them.
And I believe there in Wisconsin, somebody was racing with a Dalmatian. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep. They were there last year too at the Nationals. Yeah. So it's like, that's so cool. Just seeing dogs that like, aren't necessarily, you know, when you say mushing, you think huskies, like, right off the bat, right? That's the first thought. And so like, yeah, when you say like, oh yeah, I've seen like, literally 30 different breeds do it. You know, I don't know if you know Muppy, the little...
Oh, yeah.
I think you interviewed her. Yeah, the Dachshund Border Collie mix. She's like 10 pounds. She loves it.
Yep.
Let her run.
Yeah, I've had her on our show before. So since we have crossed paths a couple of times now, let's really talk about what you're doing in the community. And I would imagine this is sort of cross-pollinating on both sides. I'm sure some of your dog training clients may be interested in what you're doing out on the trail, since potentially you're taking their dogs with you to races and all that. When we met in in Washington last year, I remember walking up to you there after the races, and I was so envious of your camera rig. And I will be the first to admit, Andrew, I have taken over the last year or so, going off of a picture that I have of your camera back then, of trying to recreate that setup with my Canon camera and the tools that I have. But let's talk about that, because you are not, if I am understanding this, you are not a quote-unquote professional photographer or videographer or anything like that. This is really a passion project of yours, right?
100%. Yep. I'm making $0. In fact, I'm losing dollars doing all this. And that's not a complaint. I am so happy and fulfilled to chase all these dogs with my camera.
And you're doing a heck of a job of that. I think when we met, you said, well, I've been to Canada and I've been to, you know, the West Coast and the East Coast and all over in between, back and forth. I guess the question is, why dog mushing? You know, there's all sorts of dog sports. There's agility and tracking and herding trials and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Not coming from a mushing background, how did you fall into that sport compared to everything else that you could potentially have done with dogs?
Yeah, so my friend Ashley, I met her at the dog park where I walk all my dogs. And she is a husky. She's been super into mushing. And she knows knew I was really, really into biking. And so one day we were walking and she said, hey, there's a race this weekend. It's sled dogs. I was like, well, what do you, you know, all I knew about sled dogs was Balto, the Disney movie,
right?
The cartoon from like forever ago. So I went to that first race with really no expectations. I had no idea what was going to happen. And it was like love at first sight, just the dogs, especially like seeing just how happy they were. Because that's where it really all started, was how much I love Bailey, my dog. I know that everybody feels the same way towards their dogs. And like, I would do anything for this dog. I would move heaven and hell for this dog. And I know that people will cherish these memories forever. And so I really just, that's what really fuels me, is just, you know, capturing these dogs for to remember forever.
So obviously this is an audio podcast. It's tough to talk about your product, if you will, in this yep. format. What is that process for you? Are you just setting up a camera somewhere on the trail and trying to capture this? Can you kind of outline for us, Andrew, what is this? You know, you're going into this at the start of the race, and then here you are at the end where you're finishing up this product, whether it be a video or a documentary or whatever. Describe that process a little bit if you can.
Yeah, I mean, it even starts before the race. So, like going into this year, I had like eight races that I planned out on attending and filming. And so those I know are going to be my eight. And so even over the summer, I already started getting audio. Like, what songs do I want to go? What order do I want the songs to go? And I start to visualize everything in my head. And then the races come. So I show up to a race, and I try to do a mix of both filming the racing, because that's obviously the main thing, but then a good balance, too, of what's called B-roll, which is sort of behind the scenes, or, like, you know, not racing. It's people loving on their dogs, headshots of the dogs. So during the racing, I try to strike a balance of filming people racing and then just getting close-ups. And then usually that's about, if anybody's listening that's technical, I usually shoot about 2 terabytes of data per race.
Wow.
Onto an SSD. So at the end of the season, usually I've got about 20 terabytes of video. It's a slow process. I need to trim the fat on each clip, because I'll hit record, and then I'll film a scene of a dog going by, and then I'll hit record again. So I trim the clip. Then I have to color grade it all, because on this equipment, everything comes out very gray and very boring and flat. And that's on purpose. That's just so that I can go in and pull the colors out correctly. Because if something has too much color, you can't really remove it. But you can add. It's kind of like white paint. You know, you got to add just a touch of color at a time.
Right.
So I go through that process, and then I will add in like different effects, you know, fire and whatever other corny things I like to add in. And yeah, they're little music videos, and then I upload them to the internet.
And you're doing all different types of classes, and like you said, different types of races and all of that. One other question in regard to your process. You said about 20 terabytes, which I know what that is. That's a tremendous amount of data. For folks that do not know, what are we thinking about in terms of hours that you have to sift through? When I tell people about our podcast, I typically say for every hour that I record, I do about 3 hours of other stuff, whether it be editing or promoting or whatever. What is your ratio, if you will?
Of like time spent editing my videos to capturing the raw footage?
Yeah, if you have ooh, I don't know, 100 hours of footage from the World Championship, what will that break down to in terms of time before you have a finished product? And then lastly, what would a project like that equal in terms of time? Is it like a half hour deal? Is it you know, a 5-minute video? What does it equal after all of this?
Okay, yeah. So, so I'll use World Champions as like a sort of a outline, because that was a good race. It had about 300 people, 200 something people.
Right.
And so that video I'm still working on. That'll probably be done in another month. It does take that long, mostly because, again, this is in my free time. I work, you know, that whole job walking dogs. So I plug away at it. Probably total hours, I want to say maybe like 100 hours total, probably, okay, per music video that, or per race. And that'll translate to probably about a 10-minute finished video, all that data. So that 2 terabytes, that'll condense down to about 100 gigabytes or so. And that'll be like the final output.
Wow. That is a tremendous amount of work. As you said, right now, it's just a passion project. We're going to find out how people can follow you and maybe view some of these videos here in just a second. But I have some questions that I've been asking all of our guests. Are you ready for them?
I'm ready.
All right. So you said that you make music videos. And I know that you use regular music. You're not a fan of canned music, or as they say in the industry, pod safe music, or that. You're using honest to goodness music. So my first question is, what is your favorite song or artist? What are you listening to really get you going?
Definitely favorite artist in the moment is Tiny Moving Parts. They're kind of like Midwest punk rock.
Okay.
They just give me a good vibe.
Tiny Moving Parts. All right. So we'll note that one. Next one up, Andrew, you spend quite a bit of time driving back and forth, not only for your racing, but obviously in the hectic Boston traffic. I've been in that more times than I want to count. What are you listening to besides music? Are you an audiobook fan? Are you a podcast guy? If so, do you have a recommendation?
I'm a super, super nerd. So, probably not a lot of people are going to connect with this one, but I listen to a lot of World of Warcraft podcasts when I travel.
Okay. And for folks that do not know, that is definitely a video game platform.
100%. So, yep.
For sure. Okay. Next one up, since you do all this traveling, what is your favorite road trip snack? If you're pulling into one of these truck stops, a Love's or a Pilot or whatever, what is your go-to?
It's got to be the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, with the asterisk that it cannot be the regular ones. It absolutely has to be the puffy ones.
Hold on a second. Now, I'm going to jump into the weeds here for just a second. I remember you telling me when we were talking that you are a super bland eating kind of guy. You like cheese pizza with nothing on it. Yeah, you're pretty basic. What is up with the Flamin' Hot Cheetos?
There's something about it. I'm not a big spice guy.
Okay.
But when I'm driving solo, there's something about that spice that when I'm tired, it just keeps me awake.
Okay. All right. Next up is a piece of gear that you always have with you other than your phone. I know you have, like I said, you have a really kick butt camera system, but what are you always carrying with you, whether it's in your pocket, in your cup holder, whatever?
My GoPro. So I personally record a lot on the GoPro that doesn't get posted.
Okay.
And it's strictly for liability, so that when I'm walking dogs, I know I've got everything on film just in case something happens.
That is a great idea. I'm going to have to tell that to my wife and daughter. I think that's a great addition to the kit, is having that. What's the setup? Do you have it like on a chest strap? What are you using?
Yep. So I use a chest strap, and I just clip the GoPro on there. And that usually gets me a couple hours of footage.
Okay. I like that. This is why we do these questions, to give people ideas for sure. So last question before folks can find out more about you, Andrew, is, what do you want to have people leave with? What is your take-home message? Again, this is sort of a cross post between our dog training podcast and our mushing podcast. What's your elevator pitch? What is your take-home message?
Sure. It is to be like, and nobody's going to know who this is necessarily, but to be like Insa Robinson, who is my role model musher. I have a really beautiful video of her at a race where she pulls up to the start line. One of her dogs, now mind you, I want to say she is at this time like rank one in the world for scooter. She pulls up to the start line. One of her dogs is super amped up, ready to go. And one you can immediately tell is not really vibing that day. She did not hesitate in pulling that dog from racing. And I love that. I love when people especially athletes who are rank one in the world, put the welfare of their animals before anything else. So that is my message. Put your dog before anything else.
I love that. And I think that's a great message to end with. Andrew, where can folks follow you? Where are you active on socials? And where can folks watch some of these videos?
Yes, if you go on YouTube and you search up High Energy Dog Care, there's going to be two playlists. There's Cinema Meets Dog Racing, and then there's The Dog Box. Those are both my mushing playlists, and that's where all my good content will be.
Okay, we'll post those in the show notes. Andrew, it was a pleasure to connect here and introduce you to our audience. I'm looking forward to the next time you and I meet up. I have no idea where that will be. I know they just announced the Continental Championships in Mexico next year. Can we give them a tease? Are you thinking about traveling down there? I know that that van will make it.
Yep. So I am 100% right now sitting in the middle of the fence to the point where the breeze could blow me onto either side of the fence.
Ooh.
So I'm very, very, yep. It's not a hard no, not a hard yes. I'm right in the middle.
I love it. Well, hey, if that's the next time you and I see each other, I look forward to connecting as well. And we might just have to have one of those cheese pizzas together and chew the fat a little bit. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. And on behalf of my guest, this is Robert. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.